And of course, quite soon after well, he stopped playing for Gloucester, the war intervened. What war service did you see, Bill?
Well, I first of all, incidentally, I was in the early days, I was a professed pacifist, and there was a very strong influence that way for my generation, and one or two very well-known and inspiring people led this sort of pacifist movement. And although I never went to the Union for debates and that sort of thing, it was during my time at the university that the Union passed the notorious debate that this House will on no account take up arms for king and country or something like that, which was reputed to have great influence in Germany with the Nazis, really, because they thought, you know, that all young British people were of that sort of view. But I had been greatly influenced, and there was a great struggle, you know, but I was professed, and then I was down as a curate in charge on the south coast, near Brighton, and, you know, the Germans only a little way away. And I was reported by somebody, I don't know, to have told my people that if the Germans parachutists landed on the downs behind us, it was our duty to go and help them. And I was visited by a detective, you know, to find out who this chap was. And I mean, it wasn't that wasn't the sole cause, but it obviously became that pacifism was ridiculous to preach as it did in those days, that if you were, you know, a pacifist, that in the end that your opponents would come to agree with you or something of that sort. So I, I must give this up. And I remember I had an interview with the bishop and told him. And really asking him what he thought my duty was to do, and was to either volunteer or as a chaplain, or to continue the job which I had started. You see, the first curate in charge of a new thing. So it was very much in its early days of development. We had made a good start, but it was only, you know, still a start. But to my surprise, he said, "Hey, you ought to go." And that was very awkward, because I was called up for December 40, and our first child was due that month. And I put in a plea, and the chaplain's department was very kind and postponed my call up for a month. But then I was called up. And then I had service in England, actually twice with an OCTU, on the same barracks, but with one was signals and one was the infantry wing of Sandhurst. And then we had a circular about volunteering for the 1st Airborne Division. And I don't know, in a rush of blood to my head or something, I volunteered, thinking, you know, my wife had come to join me in rooms near the barracks, but and I thought we had probably several years in that job, but to my dismay, really, I was almost at once called up to join the 1st Airborne Division, which was just starting then, and I was sent off to do my jumps.
And, so you became a parachuting priest.
Well, It was, yes, it was very much a new thing in those days, but we had a very good preparation, really. We had to go up, now, I can't remember where it was now, but we had about sort of 10 days, I think, of PT and going for runs and mock apparatus for learning how to do it. The jump from a hole in the base of the plane, and the first jumps were like that, and then you had to sort of sit in this all round this hole, four of you like that, and you waited for the chap who was the sergeant who was dispatching you, and you learnt how to sit. You know, you had to look at his hand and said, I can't remember the words of command, but the actual word was, you know, he would say go, and then you had to push yourself off and straighten up. And of course, first time I did it, I hit my head against the thing and was unconscious on the but one thing I am rather proud of doing is that I'd never been up in a plane until I went up. The first experience of going in an aeroplane, I had to jump out of it.
And you didn't bang your head that time?
No, fortunately.
Did you go into action with the Airborne Brigade?
Yes, I did. We went out to North Africa. But it was a case, really, of chasing the action, mostly. The first, I can't remember the detail now, but I was with the airborne troops in North Africa, and we were my memory is that we were sort of a succession of really just training, and then I grabbed at the chance of joining the 4th Brigade, which had come out from India and somewhere else, but and with them I was I had a very happy time with them, partly because the 10th Battalion that I was with turned over from the Royal Sussex Regiment, and I'd been in Sussex, and my wife was very much Sussex, and so that was a very happy time. And then we got ready for Sicily on 24 hours' notice, but in the end we were never used. And then I can't remember the detail now, but I was transferred. I was told that I was excess establishment, or whatever the right word is, and I would have to leave and go to the 1st Brigade. And I was furious because, you know, it's been marvellous, my best time as a chaplain with this 10th Battalion. And I asked to be sent home and all sorts of things like that. But it didn't work, and I stayed with the 3rd Battalion. And we crossed over to Italy at Taranto, and I can't remember which battalion it was, but I do remember this, hearing, you know, our boat drew up by the quayside, and there were one or two airborne chaps shouting out to them and asking, you know, how things were. And the first news we had was that our general had been killed by a sniper, and another that a whole battalion had gone down in Taranto Harbour, and a ship had moored on top of a mine, and most of the chaps were drowned. So that was a terrible start. And then we sort of started moving up Italy as the Germans retreated. And we never really got into action there until, I can't remember, I suppose I had an individual order to return to Britain any rate, I do remember getting back and being directed to 3rd Battalion. It was just before Christmas, but then it was a case of preparing for the invasion of Europe. And we had an awful time, really, in that time after time, we would be confined to barracks and briefed for an operation, and then it would be postponed 24 hours, postponed 24 hours, and then cancelled, because, you know, the Germans were at that time retreating.
Yeah.
And finally, we were briefed for a place called Arnhem, and we had the usual thing, confined to barracks, postponed 24 hours, and I think another postponement, so we thought that the whole thing would be cancelled. But we were released, and I think for a week we were free, but it was an unsatisfactory state, neither one thing nor the other. And I do remember somebody saying, when we were watching a football match between companies or something like that, and one of the officers who had been to brigade said that the airborne division had been rung up by the post office, I think, to say that they'd picked up the details of the whole operation simply by listening in on the general telephone. And I remember asking our intelligence officer what he thought of the plan of campaign for Arnhem, and his reply was that it stinks. And so, you know, it wasn't the most optimistic. And however, off we went. And I remember, you know, the landing and how we went in dribs and drabs. It was much too far from the bridge we were supposed to be capturing. Yes, I in that sort of state, I was in a house on the first floor, and there was our CO, out of touch with his battalion because the signal system just wasn't working.
Yeah.
And the brigadier and the simile and the general. And it was while I was there, I think, that, yeah, so we were over the back garden came a medical orderly, and he'd come from the nearby hospital, and I asked him details, and I said, oh, well, will you direct me, and I'd like to come with you and meet my MO. And so, to cut a long story short, I went with him into that hospital and was sort of going around talking to people, including some various German youngsters, actually. There was a young German, I don't know what they were called, and one or two of them were there.
That was like the Hitler Youth.
Having been wounded, yes. Yeah. Hitler Youth, what did you say?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, that's right, Hitler Jugend. And I remember talking to one of them who spoke some English, and he said he was, they were all very upset because the Jews had crossed the Rhine or something like that. And then I was talking to one of the other men, and I turned around and I saw a German soldier standing by the door with a rifle. I thought, that's funny. Why didn't they take the rifle away? And it was the... They didn't take it away because they were in charge. And that started prisoner of war.
Mm.
A sad end, really, particularly because I'd went to look for my MO, who had still disappeared somewhere upstairs, and I could have got away down in the back, but then I agreed to meet with him, and rightly or wrongly, I decided to stay and meet with him, and But that was that. We were both taken. A very disappointing end, really.
Yeah. So how long were you a prisoner of war?
Oh, well, that was September, wasn't it? And we were released finally, and I think it was April 45, something like that. Not very long, but, you know, quite long enough. It was
the worst time
in my home, yes. Very hungry days, and you never knew how it was all going to end. You know? The Germans might have done anything, you know. But that was a very inglorious sort of end, really. But that's how it was.
Yeah. Mm. Sorry,
I smile when I hear Bill say, wrongly accused of being a pacifist to prisoner of war. There's some story between the two.
Mm.